This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
What role do real estate agents play in our housing crisis? From renting to buying to selling, how much power and influence do they have? And do real estate agents work under a code of ethics or laws? We're even hearing that some people are trying to boycott real estate agents and trying to sell or rent their home without an agent. But real estate agents are the link. They're that communication channel that we work under, whether it is buying or selling or renting. So how much do we understand about their job? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning, Nick Healy, joining you from ABC Shepparton. Nick, let it be said up front that I know a lot of really nice real estate agents who I know listen to this show on a regular basis. So we don't want today's program to be a complete pile-on and stereotype. But up until now, the role and the importance, I guess, or the influence of real estate agents within our current housing crisis, their job has sort of almost been overlooked.
It feels a bit nebulous. We talk so much about how we make sure that people have access, whether that's renting safe housing, whether they're looking to purchase affordable housing. We talk so much about the disconnect between the buyer, the renter, the seller, the owner. I don't feel like we've had a good conversation about where that layer of real estate agent comes into it, what role they can play across it. I'm a relatively recent homeowner. I spent a good 45 years of my life without sort of, you know, as a renter, as a non-homeowner. I've had a lot of interactions with real estate agents. I'd categorise them as right across the board. Some have been great, some have been not so great. I've never really thought too deeply about the role they play. They've always felt like, and again, not a pylon, but more like a necessary evil than anything that I understood the part of. And I think that goes to a little bit, like for an industry we interact with so often, it feels really opaque to me. I don't know a lot about how they get to be real estate agents, what they do. It's on me a little bit. I've never really pursued the information, but they do feel a bit confusing at times.
And I wonder how much of the stereotype is true and whether or not the role of a real estate agent has changed over the decades. Certainly the amount of money that's exchanged when it comes to buying and selling, that has changed dramatically over the decades. You know, when my parents were selling their house, they were considered to be overpaying because they paid, you know, $15,000 for their home. And now we're talking sometimes, you know, millions and millions of dollars. So there's large sums of money here. The stereotype and how potentially we treat real estate agents or how real estate agents treat us, I think is something we want to pull apart a little bit today to look at the influence and the role that they play.
Well, I think we need to pull it apart. I think it's very easy to sit back and go, well, hang on, what are those guys doing? I don't think it's so easy to actually engage them and speak to them about it. You mentioned the amount of money that they're dealing with has changed a lot. I think so's the nature on the renting side as well. Like, I'm old enough to remember when a real estate agent might actually pop you in their car and drive you around to several properties to look at over the day from a rental point of view. These days, of course, you know, it's arrive at 10:15 and make sure you've got your application form preloaded, ready to go, because they'll shut the doors at 20 past 10. But that's the nature of the housing market right now. So how different is it for a real estate agent over the past couple of decades? I'm fascinated.
Are you a real estate agent? Do you feel stereotyped? And what don't we understand about your profession?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton. As we talk about real estate agents and the role that they play in our current housing crisis, but also the bigger picture of real estate agents and what we do and don't understand. There is a small but growing wave, Nick Healy, of people trying to skip real estate agents altogether and Uber-like platforms that are opening up. And this is something that you've got experience with.
When I was back in Dubbo, did indeed buy a house through someone who happened to be a conveyancer, so they were selling their own home outside of a real estate agent. And I have to say it was a fairly simple, very open conversation that was done very, very quickly. I had no issues with it, to be perfectly honest. Similarly, buying a home in Shepparton through a real estate agent was not a particularly onerous task either, but it was very interesting to compare the two. It probably was a little bit smoother back in Dubbo.
Toby Campbell is the sales director at Kane Real Estate. Toby, a lot of people will say you can't trust real estate agents, you've got to play games, they never tell you the truth, they're only working for one person and that's themselves. Do you feel like any of those statements are true?
Yeah, I do think some of those can be true. I think it's really important, firstly, to realise that, number one, there's two different roles in a real estate agent. You've got your property management side and, of course, your sales side. And all of those pain points for purchasers and tenants, all of the pain points typically are between purchasers and tenants. Now, as our role is we work for the owner and we work for the landlord. So most of the pain points felt from people are on the purchasing side and the tenant side, and talking about us working for ourselves, no, we're really actually employed by the owner and we're employed by the landlord. So that's where our allegiances really lie.
Toby, just a very interesting, when you tell people what you do for work at the moment in this current climate, what reactions do you get?
Mixed. It's different for, I believe, lots of the bad press at the moment for real estate agents is towards property managers, and because of the rental crisis out there at the moment, and, you know, being as lots of tenants are going, you're finding it very difficult to find rental properties. The sales side of the business for us at the moment is quite different. We're in quite a balanced market at the moment. There's lots of media reports of price increases still going up. We haven't really seen that in Melbourne. That's mostly more of Sydney-based news. So for us, it's quite balanced on the sales side of the business, where the rental side has been a bit chaotic for the first half of the year based on, low stock levels and lots of people trying to get in that rental market. So, lots of the pain points directly to me, not really, but to our property managers. I see lots of, if I scroll through comments on Instagram and things like that for property managers, property managers are the worst people that have ever been in the history of the earth. So, which is pretty tough on them.
The idea that real estate agents play games and that you can't get to the truth and you don't know what they're saying is true. I mean, there's already texts coming in saying, as a first home buyer, I felt like real estate agents have stood in the way of me buying properties. They'll tell vendors not to take offers and have clauses such to subject to finance. It's important for first home buyers in favour of unconditional contracts that might be used as a way of bargaining to make that first home buyer pay more. In terms of the laws that you have to work under, are there many? So let's say, for example, somebody makes an offer on a home to purchase. Do you have to legally take that to the vendor?
Yes and no. So firstly, my first point is, what's an offer? People get misconstrued that an offer is, let's say we're selling a property and it's a $500,000 one-bedroom apartment to a first-home buyer. They offer us $500,000. What is the offer? So the offer is technically the full package, which is full name, residential address, the price, deposit amount, settlement terms, and then any conditions on that offer as well. So what you've sort of touched on there with first home buyers and subject to finance is a bit of a difficult one for owners. And what that means is that the property, if they accepted an offer subject to finance, it's not actually deemed as sold until that finance clause is cleared. So if we have two offers and one of those offers is not subject to finance and one is subject to finance, and we work for the owner, as I've said, our best advice is to take the one that is not
that has the money.
So that's correct, yeah, because subject to finance is not a guaranteed sale.
But that does seem to cut out. I mean, there's not a lot of people walking in who aren't subject to finance, surely.
Depending on what areas you work in. Yes, like, for example, I'll give you a direct result for me. I do a lot of property sales in East Melbourne, which is quite a wealthy suburb, and I do a lot of property sales in Collingwood, which is, a step down on that. Collingwood, we see lots of subject to finance. East Melbourne, we see barely any.
So to subject, I mean, subject to finance, and there's subject to finance, isn't there? There's those who are, here's an offer, but I haven't even been to the bank yet to figure out whether or not they're going to give me the money. So let's put in subject to finance. And then there, you have pre-approval. So there's probably a difference. So do people think, well, I can just make an offer, but I haven't really done my due diligence yet? So they're
So with pre-approval, it's pre-approval subject to valuation of the property. So that is still subject to finance, even though if you go to ANZ Bank and they come back here and say, yep, you're pre-approved to $1 million, you are pre-approved subject to the valuation. You have to have a signed contract on both sides, subject to finance, that is then put to the bank, and then they value it on top of that as well.
Do you think the average person knows this?
You know what? That is a lot of where I try and help people with. I go, okay, you'd like to buy it. Do you know what you need to do from here? And a lot of the time, it's very interesting that people do not know. So part of our role is guidance throughout a process for a seller, but also for a buyer, and people really don't know what they're doing.
I guess because you don't do it very often in your life, do you?
Exactly. You know, you do it 2 or 3 times a year. We do it 10 times a week, whereas someone's doing it 2 or 3 times a year, 2 or 3 times in a lifetime. There's not 2 or 3 times a year, it'd be nice. 2 or 3 times in a lifetime. It's not something that you're very experienced with. And yeah, there's a lot of hand holding that goes along the way.
I feel like I'm a little surprised to learn that even if you're pre-approved, you might still be on the back foot when it comes to these offers. Is there any scenario where you would put someone making an offer while waiting for pre-approval, is there anything that would make you push them forward a little bit? Do you look at the individual at all, Toby, or is it just the numbers on the page?
A bit of both. It's not necessarily the numbers on a page being the sale price, as I said to you before about the package of the offer. Let's say that you have two offers. They're both $500,000 of the same property. Okay. Firstly, we're going to try and get more from one of them. Let's say the first home buyer that has that subject to finance comes up an extra $1,000, so that's $501,000, but they've got a shorter settlement term, where that person who has not got a finance clause might have 90 days, the first home buyer might be 30 days. So maybe it is worth that risk for the owner to go for the subject to finance offer. So it's always looking at the package. We're not trying to discount anyone. We accepted a subject to finance offer on a property just yesterday when I was sitting in the office where I am right now. So we don't not do it. It's just about if we have multiple offers, we work in the best interest of the owner to minimise their risk and minimise days on market and maximise the sale price.
Why did you get into the profession?
It's such a flexible job. So I've been doing real estate for 10 years. And prior to that, I was an underground coal miner. So very different. Switched over to real. I know. Yeah, very dirty. Now I'm in suits every day. The difference is it still doesn't feel like full-on work. I speak to people. We have conversations. We advise them through processes. It doesn't feel like I'm in an underground coal mine doing 12-hour shifts in the pitch black.
Toby, that is clearly a good reason to make a change there.
You mentioned
the suits, and we have had one text in. I just have to ask, is it a tight blue suit? Someone wants to know what it is with real estate agents and blue suits.
I'm just wearing a casual shirt and a pair of chinos today. So, no, we don't really do the full suits every day anymore.
Toby, thanks for your time. We appreciate your honesty. Tony Campbell, sales director at Kane Real Estate Agent. Texts coming in, flying in, saying what qualifications do real estate agents need? Most agents I know maybe didn't even get through year 12. Well, we'll put that to the former Real Estate Institute of Victoria, the former president, in just a moment. But let's have a chat to Ari, who's called in from Carnegie. Hi, Ari.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. What did you want to share?
Just the very brief and quick benefits of using an agent, because I think these days with the way the internet is, a lot of people question whether or not there's value in employing an agent to sell their property and how much value they bring to the table. I think as far as using an agent, employing someone who truly understands your property's opportunities, where the value lies in your house, in your land, in your location, and being able to adequately convey that to buyers and make sure it's not lost on them, I think that's something that people don't probably appreciate to the level they do, and they understand why agents are valuable and why they should be employed, as opposed to selling your home yourself.
So you've clearly had a pretty good experience on that front, have you, Ari?
As an agent?
Oh, as a seller, I'm guessing.
Oh, well, look, I'm an estate agent and I've also sold my property myself as well. But the point I was getting to was I think these days a lot of people are questioning whether or not employing an agent to sell your property is worthwhile and if you'll actually get a return on your investment as far as the cost of commission. I wanted to call in and just really convey that with the right agent, with the right plan, it's certainly an investment worth.
So do you feel like there's a bit of pressure coming from the public at the moment, really questioning, hence why we're doing today's program too, right? We're sort of trying to look at, well, what is your role and what are the ethics behind a real estate agent and whose interests do they have in the forefront? Do you feel like there's a bigger pushback from the general public at the moment around what you do and how you do it?
I think from the general public there is, I don't know if concerns is the right word, but there's a lot of questions regarding is an agent obsolete or is an agent a valuable asset to a would-be homeowner or a would-be purchaser? I think an agent's role is to maximise the sale price for their vendor and make sure that if a client comes to them who has a problem, and the problem is I need to sell my home and I need to get the best price for my home, that you can provide an adequate solution ethically and morally that doesn't break any rules or push any boundaries.
Good on you, Ari. Good to hear from you as well. Lots of questions around the blue suits. That's really, again, another line that I didn't expect to come up. I remember when real estate agents, there was this sort of thread of a conversation saying, could they just wear smart shorts and long socks and an open neck shirt? And everybody was like, whoa, come on, man. Like, no, that's not the go. It has to be a suit. And even on the hottest days, you know, you'd see real estate agents sweating it out in a suit.
I feel like you're opening a real can of worms here because, I mean, are the business shorts and the long socks on the way back? That's a whole conversation out there, Rochelle.
I am more than happy to have that conversation, Nick Healy. If you're a real estate agent, do you feel stereotyped? What don't we understand about your profession? What has your experience been with a real estate agent?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt and Nick Healy with you as we discuss the role of real estate agents and in particular their role during our current housing crisis. John Dowling is the principal of KL Dowling and the past president of the Real Estate Institute of Victoria. John, a lot of people are asking, what qualifications does it take to become a real estate agent? What does it take? What do you need to do?
You are required to have an estate agent's licence, which is subject in turn to the Estate Agents Act, and that's a course of professional study that was in full-time terms, used to be 2 years, but in any event, it's, a lot of it is now done remotely or online and run from various institutions.
So it used to take 2 years. How long does it take now?
There's no certainty about that because it depends on the way that it's operated, but as a general rule, less than that time. I must say, when I started, it was 4 years, which included the valuation qualification because that was part of it at the time.
So does that mean now that there are multiple ways that you can get a real estate agent's license? From reading between the lines here, it doesn't feel like there's one overarching body or school that you go to in order to get it. And it's sort of whittled down from 4 years to, I've heard of people doing real estate agent courses and it taking 6 weeks.
Perhaps in some cases, but ultimately it's controlled by the Business Licensing Authority, which is a government agency that's part of Consumer Affairs Victoria. And the qualifications essentially are unchanged in that you have to meet the standards that are prescribed under the Estate Agents Act and at various other sources, such as the Rules of Professional Conduct, which are also under the Act, and the Rules of Conduct by the Real Estate Institute of Victoria and also the Real Estate Institute of Australia. So there are four separate areas of professional conduct rules or regulations that you have to meet, which require, and in turn, the standards of knowledge are prescribed or defined. It's not as straightforward or as simple as it might appear outside this field, but the professional skills and knowledge are central to estate agency practice. That's why estate agents are needed. We have perhaps as a profession failed to impart that understanding to the public at large. As the gentleman that you spoke to before acknowledged. Most estate agents are knowledgeable and trustworthy. Unfortunately, there's a small minority that do bring us into some disrepute, but of course they're the ones that get publicity, so it creates a false image to the public at large.
Well, John, you were talking about all the rules and the regulations and the codes of conduct. A lot of people on the text line suggesting they've had some poor experiences. Just one here saying the games I experienced with real estate agents when buying my first property was a joke. I felt like they were deliberately delaying providing contracts, trying to train more interest in the property, on and on and on. If people are going outside of their rules and regulations, if they are not adhering to their rules of conduct, what penalties are there? What trouble can a real estate agent get in for doing the wrong thing?
Well, firstly, the ethical... thank you for the question. The ethical standards are maintained and supervised by the Real Estate Institute of Victoria, so that if an agent is found to be guilty of unprofessional or unethical practice, then that person can be penalised or even at business licensing authority level have the licence removed. The advice to the public on this question should be, look, if you feel uncomfortable in the quality of the advice you're getting from the estate agent, then find an alternative.
Well, I guess that takes me back to the quality of advice, the quality of experience. I actually find it quite profound, John, that when you were training in this profession, it was a four-year course that ended in a graduation, and now it could be only a matter of weeks. Surely that level of experience and expertise and training is being lost, and then as a result, you're getting a watering down of professionalism across the board. Does that not come into it?
To some extent it does. The qualification standards may have diminished, not perhaps to the extent that you mentioned of a matter of a few weeks, but it was, as you say, if you go back a few decades, then firstly, valuation and estate agency were part of the same qualification, essentially. The four-year course qualified you as a valuer as well as an estate agent. The first 2 years qualified you as an estate agent. But in those days, most qualified in both. Those two fields were separated largely as a result of the actions taken by RMIT, which split them into two separate courses. And so people started doing one or the other, but not both, sadly. Because valuation is a central skill to estate agency practice. You have to be able to advise your client on the value of the property that your client has engaged you
to. Yes, and that's where people will dispute whether or not that valuation is true and correct, or if they're just trying to get the sale and they're inflating what they think they can get for the price.
And, of course, John, the flip side of that is we're talking about sort of the seller to real estate line there. The people who are on the text line saying they had a bad experience, that's on the buying side. As you just said, like, you know, if you're not happy with the advice you're getting, find another real estate agent. That's not an option if you're trying to buy a home. Like, you know, so what can we do there if you feel like there are being games played when you're attempting to buy a property?
Well, it is an important question, thank you, because advice is necessary, and it's sometimes not well understood that estate agents can act for buyers as well as sellers, but not for both. An agent, by definition, is an agent, meaning representing the client. The client is the person by whom you're engaged and the person that will pay your fees or commission. And in most cases, that is for the seller or the vendor. However, agents are available to act equally for the purchaser and to give the purchaser advice. And if you find an estate agent who's also a qualified valuer, then the advice you get can be properly researched and reliable. Purchase price is a single figure. You can't buy a property for more than one figure. So it's important to ascertain the figure at which you are justified to purchase the property, being the price at which you could sell it, by definition. And if you can get that, it's similar to selling the property with, and as my colleague John Keating has emphasised repeatedly, published reserve prices if sold by auction.
Well, that will be interesting to see whether that's something that ever gets any kind of traction if we, you know, have to openly publish our reserve. I found so much of what you have said today, John Dowling, fascinating, and the changes that have occurred within the profession over the decades. Thank you. John Dowling, the principal of K.A. Dowling, and he's the past president of the Real Estate Institute of Victoria. I didn't realise that once Nick Healy, you took 4 years and you were also then trained as a valuer. So if the average real estate agent, let's not say, maybe it's not as short as 6 weeks, although I do know there are some real estate agent courses that are as short as 6 weeks. But if you're not being trained as a valuer, we just presume that real estate agents can value a property. We feel like that's a part of the job.
I did think that was part of the job. I'm very surprised to hear that it was previously something very different and then split later on. Just on that qualification level as well, I have been having a quick zip around to seeing what it takes in Victoria to actually walk away with a real estate license. And you do have to have had, as they put it, an aggregate of at least 1 year full-time experience as an agent's representative on top of your education as well. So there does seem to be some, certainly some strictures around it.
Mark's in Geelong.
I wonder if I could talk about my experiences with real estate, both as a purchaser and a vendor. And the particular tendency that some real estate agencies seem to have to promote their real estate agents as almost rock stars. They have these giant hoardings. You see them on the side of buses. They've all got gleaming teeth. And they show... They show up to the property in their BMWs with, as you said, their tight suits. And it seems just incongruous. You know, they're offering a service, and yet they have this tendency to focus on themselves.
It's true. I've seen a lot of those billboards too. And the fancy car, this is interesting. I remember when we were trying to buy our first home. It was a very small, modest apartment, very small and modest. And I say the word modest and actually it was a terrible apartment. But anyhow, the real estate agent arrived in not a fancy car. It was an okay car. A part of me went, how great, how refreshing. And then the other part of me went, are you a really crap real estate agent? So the car is, and the symbol that the car is, that's interesting too. But I think that, you know, Mark is onto something. Real estate agents, they promote themselves. There are billboards with their faces on there.
Well, of course, they're on social media. Videos these days have been a huge part of selling a property, and it's really about that patter, that focus on the individual. I mean, that is the idea, I think, that we've always had about a real estate agent, is you want an individual that you can trust and who knows what they are doing. That's certainly contemporarily been the theory. I don't know what it's like now. Andrew's also called in. Andrew, good morning to you.
Hello there. I've been a buyer, seller and a user of rental agents. I found you've got to know who you're dealing with, and that's your job to find out the real estate agent's a good and honest guy or girl. And the next thing is, they're an intermediary. Like if you're a landlord, as I am, you know, they're telling you that this is the things you've got to do to be compliant. They sort of walk around and might say, oh, you're missing one smoke alarm in the bedroom. So you get one put in and keep up to date. And they're a way of being between you and the renter of the property. And that's, I find, very, very useful. And inspection reports, you get a professional inspection report that tells you if this is, you know, not working or that's mouldy or you need some paint here, and you sort of keep the properties up to high standards, mine are, all the time. And as for buying and especially for selling, you also got someone who sort of starts to talk to some sensible.
Yeah, well, you would hope so. And I think you've raised something interesting there, Andrew, in that there's agents who deal, Nick, with buying and selling, and then you have agents who specialise in renting once upon a time. And then there's the city and the country, right?
Very, very different experiences. Moving to Shepparton and having to rent somewhere sight unseen almost while coming here from a completely different state, the real estate agent I went through, they're invaluable. They helped me find a home. They were fantastic. You know, I could not speak highly enough of them, and I felt like I had a real sense of trust and communication there. That was a very different experience when I was living in a major capital city where I felt that I was walking into a lion's den if I ever had to walk in to talk about, you know, home repairs.
And you have to lie, right? You have to become a better person when you walk in and just pretend to be someone that you're not and lie. Like, you just have to, because if they knew the truth, oh, you probably wouldn't get the apartment. I think everybody fudges how much they earn. But then once upon a time you could do that, Nick. Now you can't.
No, you cannot. Nor should you, because, you know, rental stress is already a major issue on that. You know, we shouldn't be putting ourselves in a scenario where people think we're able to afford more than we can. Look, and people are having to do it, and I understand that.
The due diligence that goes behind renting a place now is incredible compared to when I was renting in my 20s. I think I rented directly from the vendor who lived around the corner, and we took him cash in a
cash
bag.
In 2002, I looked at a rental property in inner West Sydney, bargained them down on the rent because it had been vacant for so long, and then proceeded to live there for 18 years with the rent going up $10 a year every year for that entire time. And I don't know how that happened, because it doesn't happen anymore.
Oh, things have changed and we are showing our age. The role that real estate agents play in our current housing crisis. How much do you know about the work that they do and the role that they play?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Rochelle Hunter, Nick Healy with you as we talk about real estate agents. What qualifications do they need? What code of ethics do they work under? Who are they working for? Who do they represent? And how many people are now considering not even using real estate agents? Dr. Payman Keza is from RMIT. He's a senior lecturer in economics and the deputy director of the Behavioural Business Lab, who also did a PhD on selling mechanisms within the Australian housing market. Payman, the role of real estate agents, are we confusing as consumers? Like, are we confused as to who they work for and what their role is, do you think?
Yes, I agree with you. I think we need to be a little bit more, in some sense, aware of the role and what are they supposed to do in these markets. And that, to me, that is just being a mediator who is facilitating the transaction in some sense. And but it has grown over time, obviously. Now they're in some sense a consultant to sell it. And in some sense, evaluator. So I'm hearing what other people are saying. So sometimes expectations are beyond what their roles are, and at other times, we should expect things to be done by them which they do not do properly. So yeah, I agree with you. That's a very important and nuanced point.
What's been the impact of that role change on the housing market, Payman? Have we seen alterations in, I guess, how that buying and selling works as the nature of a real estate agent has changed?
A good point. It depends on what market situation we are in. Usually, when housing market is in a crisis, economists and policymakers attribute these crises to macroeconomy and macroeconomic variables, such as, let's say, interest rate, GDP, unemployment, and etc. However, I, as a microeconomist, know better than some people that the microeconomics of the housing market is also very important. How this market performs, whether it is an efficient market, whether the players in the market are playing their roles properly, if the market is regulated properly such that these players are incentivized to do the right thing. So when the market evolves, when the market becomes more sophisticated, when there are further number of transactions, different players, for instance, overseas buyers are involved, all of these sort of changes would make things more difficult and basically increases the requirement for regulation. Because if you keep the regulation the same as what it was, let's say 10 or 20 years ago, then you cannot obviously deal with the changes that are happening over time.
Hang on, Dr. Keza, so do we need real estate agents? Like, are they a integral part of the housing industry? Do we need them?
I would say yes. but the technology changes massively over time. I mean, currently we absolutely need them because the housing market has a very specific situation. We're dealing with massive numbers of buyers and sellers, and neither of any, I mean, there are no two products that are exactly the same. Every house is different, and each product has massive number of attributes. So we're selling a series of heterogeneous products in a single market that requires a significant amount of search by buyers and sellers to find the proper seller and buyer. So the role that the real estate agents are currently playing is just to facilitate this trade by finding a proper buyer for a seller. So they're usually on the seller side because they get commission from the seller. However, whether we need them in the future or not, this totally depends on how technology
evolves. Yes, and that's what I find fascinating. Lots of people are saying, I can't believe so few people actually sell their own homes and don't sell it themselves. And there has been a small but a sort of growing wave of Uber-like apps or startups, Payman, where they're suggesting that we can do it ourselves. Do you predict that in the future there'll be a greater amount, there'll still be real estate agents, but there'll be a greater amount of people who choose to try and do it themselves?
It is possible. So it's not unpredictable to see, let's say, in 10 years from now on, we've got an app that allows us to sell and buy homes. But currently, as I said, if I wanted to sell my house, I would use a real estate agent because the data, I mean, that I've got, I mean, my personal observation is that real estate agents would absolutely sell your house at a better price. Now, the thing is, how would you incentivize sellers who are the initial step of a transaction starts from a seller? How would you incentivize sellers to use these apps once if they know that there is a real estate agent on the other side who can do better? That's a bit confusing to me. So that's why I wouldn't give a solid prediction of when this is going to happen. But yeah, that is definitely a possibility that but the market is absolutely much more complex than Uber and stuff like that. As I said, every house is a heterogeneous product, and finding a match buyer is a
And I think you're right, just the sheer volume now. It'll be fascinating to see if it changes. Payman, thanks for your insights. Dr. Payman Keyser is an RMIT Senior Lecturer in Economics from the Behavioural Business Lab, who's been looking into the mechanisms of how we sell and buy our homes. Michael Fotheringham is the Director of the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. And Michael, you're a regular on this program and we discuss all sorts of things around the housing market, yet we've never discussed the role of real estate agents. Has it changed in your lifetime? Have you seen their role, their importance, and maybe even the stereotype around real estate agents change?
Well, not wanting to reveal how old I am, I think it probably has changed in my lifetime. I think, you know, home purchase is for many people the biggest purchase they make in their life. It is a really complicated purchase, as Payman's indicated, and you know, we're not talking about a simple commodity of housing. It's a matching market where you look for a home that meets your needs in terms of how big it is, its location, its amenity, and a whole lot of other, you know, complex features about whether you like weatherboard or brick and all those sorts of things. So it is a really complicated sort of transaction. Legally, it's a really complicated transaction, and people can get into all kinds of trouble if they don't know what they're doing. Mm. So having someone there who does know what they're doing gives a level of assurance both to the seller and to the buyer that things are being done properly. And, you know, it's interesting that we're seeing more and more buyer's advocates helping people on the other side of that transaction to make sure that they're doing the best job of the purchase side of it, not just the sales side of it.
So, Michael,
it is a complex transaction. Yep.
Buyer's advocates, that has not come up in this conversation
yet. Yeah, that's a growing number. So they work on behalf of the buyer, yes, to try and help you purchase
the right home. That's right. And often actually it's similar qualifications or similar people doing that work, that the work on behalf of the buyer, maybe bidding at the auction, helping with inspections of the property or looking at features of the property and providing advice to that buyer, whether they're in the area or not. And, you know, some people find the auction process pretty intimidating.
Isn't that interesting, though, Michael, that we've seen a rise of buyer's advocates? Does that not speak to the fact now that it's getting harder and harder to know what is fact, what is true, to be able to read the room, and that we need someone that does it full time to be able to say, actually, you know what they're saying is not true, don't believe that, I'm going to go in, like that we can't actually do it ourselves anymore because there's just so much smoke and mirrors involved.
Well, it's that, but it's also, it brings a level of dispassion to the process because it is a nerve-wracking thing buying a house, particularly the first time. And so if you've got someone who does this every week, who knows the tricks, who knows what to look for and you know, where the traps are, then that's a huge level of assurance. And, you know, for the seller, the real estate agent, you know, provides that, the auctioneer provides that. But for the buyer, having someone to match that qualification and that professionalism is an obvious appeal.
Michael, we're talking buying and selling a lot. You know, if I had to categorise very broadly the texts we're getting in, if you've been selling a home, you've often had a really good relationship with a real estate agent. If you've been buying a home, it's mixed. If you're renting, then this is a very different conversation we are seeing at the moment.
It really is. And Australia is a little bit unusual because of the way our rental market is owned by lots and lots of small people. 70% of it is owned by investors who own one property and 90% of it is owned by people who own two or one or two. So it's mostly people with very small portfolios that overwhelmingly own our rental market. That's different to most countries where it's institutional investors. It's big institutions that own thousands and thousands of properties. Here, that means we've got lots of individual people running those properties, but it means that they tend to outsource that management to property managers. So there's, you know, we tend to talk a lot about tenants versus landlords, but really it's a triangle here. There's a third party there, the property managers. And to some extent, they're working on behalf of the landlords, but their interests aren't always completely aligned.
This is the thing, and this is the game that everybody gets confused of who's working for who and who's on whose side and who do I believe. Michael Fotheringham, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
The Director of the Housing and Urban Research Institute, Rochelle Hunter, Nick Healy with you as we pull apart what does a real estate agent do and who do they work for and how much do we understand about their profession?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning. Rochelle Hunter, Nick Healy with you. I'm in Melbourne. Nick joining you from ABC Shepparton as we talk about the role of real estate agents and where do they fit in to our current housing crisis. Chris is in Bendigo. Morning, Chris.
Oh, good morning. I'm ringing because I've bought and sold many houses over the last 50 odd years. And I've had a couple of really interesting things I think people might like to know. One was when I was auctioning a house in the city and was shopping for the best person for the job. I incentivized one with a higher percentage, you know, in his payout at the end, if you went over a particular figure. And I got $300,000 more for that just by doing that.
And the incentives that are put into place, it's not a great line, Chris, so we'll say goodbye, but thank you. I wonder how much you can trust the incentives to and whether or not that changes your sale figure. So if an agent says to you, let's say you're selling a flat of $500,000 and they say, we think it's valued at $450,000, we think that's what we can get you. We take a 3% commission. If we get you 500, then we get a 3.5% commission. But the whole time they probably know, or do they know, that they can actually get you that higher figure? This is where who do you believe comes in?
It comes down to trust. It comes down to transparency. There's a lot of conversations happening with this. And again, I feel bad, but we can't keep up with the amount of texts coming through from people who have been in similar situations.
John Keating is the Managing Director of Keating's Real Estate in Woodend. And John, you have been within the real estate profession for a long time. You have also been pushing for a long time for reserves, the real reserve, to be openly published. How likely is that to happen? And why do you think there's so much resistance against it?
It's absolutely time to stop the underquoting ploys. It's deceit. There's no need for it. How likely is it to happen? At the moment, you're aware, it's been a crusade of mine now for nearly 20 years. and I'm not getting very far. Unfortunately, the REIV don't have any appetite for reform of the rules, and sadly, it's just bringing our whole profession into disrepute. Every weekend, there's thousands of people being duped by underquoting. So how likely is it to be? I don't know. We've got to get the nod, got to get somebody really concentrating on this to get it on the agenda and have the debate. I don't know that it's the best. Well, I think it's the best solution.
Yeah.
It may not
it
be.
It would be a solution, though, Nick, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be a solution. But, John, I was just kind of curious why this has been such a passion of yours. What have you genuinely seen in the industry that's caused you to crusade on this for decades now?
Well, simply in my business, the running of our business have been based on two simple company philosophies. We can all handle the facts. If we distort the facts, we're only fooling ourselves. And what we call the local paper test, would we be embarrassed if anything we do appears on the front page of the local paper? If we'd be embarrassed, we don't do it. And I've witnessed so much deceit in the industry with underquoting, and that's one of the things that's brought us into most disrepute over the last 25 years.
Has it ramped up? So you said 25 years there. Has underquoting always been out? Because the thing is now, we're talking about huge figures and how many people, especially first home buyers, rock up to an auction, they think they're in the game, and within the first bid, they're outbid by 50 grand, and then it ends up by going, you know, $250,000 or whatever it may be over the advertised price. So huge amounts of underquoting. Has that always been there, John, even when we were talking about homes selling for $50,000, you know, say in the 70s?
No, at that stage, things were much more realistic. The dummy bidding issue then needed to be addressed and was addressed in the late 1990s.
Oh, the dummy bidding, so the fake bidding, that was a big thing then.
That brought us into disrepute. And then the underquoting has evolved. The word underquoting wasn't even in the lexicon 20 years ago. By a dictionary from 20 years ago, it was never mentioned, underquoting or overquoting, where agents overquote to win the business from an owner, from a vendor who we're acting for, and then they walk out the door and speak with a forked tongue to purchasers and underquote. It just doesn't reconcile. Will we get somewhere? Well, I certainly hope we do, and I don't intend to give up on it. It's been a passion just to see the industry cleaned up. And, you know, I'd like to think that I'm a professional agent. I've been in it a long time. There's so many that come into our business. They're in it for a few years in a boom. And quite frankly, sometimes if you have a pulse, you can sell real estate.
Well, I guess that's the interesting thing, isn't it? It's looking at the education that's involved and the skill that's involved in selling a home. Do you feel like the professionalism is being eroded in any way?
Yes, I mean, there's a lot. We need to have a lot of education. It can be very, very complex. All the yaks that we are governed by, from town planning, from building, from, you know, you name it, the Fences Act, the knowledge that we have to have. If we're well educated with knowledge, we will have a profession, but we need it to be. I think Nick mentioned before, it's about trust and transparency. Mm. And every other profession, if you go to an engineer, you go to a doctor, you trust the advice that they give you and you take it. We have to get to that stage where all our members speak the truth so that we are trusted.
Wow.
And there's not the deceit involved. You know?
Trust and transparency, I don't think they're two words, unfortunately, and I say this with all due respect, John, that go hand in hand with your profession. Well, I would love it that it gets to that point, because we're talking about people's homes and big amounts of money, and it's life-changing in so many ways.
Absolutely, but there are, as my colleague John Dowling said earlier, there are some very, very good estate agents that have been in the business a long time. It's that minority of those rogues that bring the whole reputation of the profession down.
I guess that's up to us then to do our due diligence and to make sure that we try and get that trust and transparency. John, keep fighting that fight. I think it's incredible. John Keating there, the Managing Director of Keating's Real Estate in Woodend. The profession has changed so much, even just in our lifetime, Nick, and what we've witnessed. You could see the fascination, or you could see the reasons why so many people want to get into it, right? It probably doesn't take a lot of time in order to get the qualifications. It looks like it would be a really lucrative industry to work in. So you can't blame people for wanting to become real estate agents.
Well, of course you can't. You want to know that people, you know, people have a right towards a livelihood. I would just say that when your livelihood is going to impact people's home, a shelter over their head, I think your industry needs to be held to a very high standard. And just quickly on that change, on the rise of some of the apps you've been talking about, I did note a texter saying when we talk about real estates and talk about apps, it feels a little bit like Blockbuster talking about Netflix at times.
But also, I think it's the difference between the city and the country, right? Like John Keating saying, you don't want to do something and end up with your face on the front page, on the front cover of the local paper. You're going to know people in that town, right? So if you rip someone off, if you lie, and then that Friday night you go down to the pub for a meal, you're going to get cornered. Whereas if you do it in the big city, you're potentially never going to see that person again. So when we're talking about trust and transparency, there's also that thing of, I also live three streets away from them, I have to do the right thing.
Well, I mean, that would be a lovely thing to think. I suppose in the city, the hardest part is, you know, finding a park for your BMW so your shiny suit doesn't get rumpled as you hop out.
Oh, I knew you were going to throw that in just at the end. Nick Healy, as always, mate, thank you. I'll catch you next week.
You will.
Don't forget, The Conversation Hour is a podcast. We do a lot of programs on housing, on all forms of housing affordability. So subscribe to The Conversation Hour podcast. Every day this program becomes a podcast. Go to the ABC Listener or wherever you get your podcasts.